It is time for us to get a Democrat of the day on in here. We're heading all the way up to the northwestern part of the state. Connie Lindstrom is running for the DFL in District 1A. She's kind enough today to join us to talk a little bit about her campaign. Connie, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And you are, this is indeed the very northwestern part of the state. You're far closer to Winnipeg than you are to Minneapolis, St. Paul.
We definitely are. It takes about an hour and a half to drive to Winnipeg, and it takes about five to get to Minneapolis.
and that's a tough five, too, because there's really, from your district, there's not too many straight roads. You got to take a few different avenues down that way.
That's right. I have to say, this is one of the few days that I think you guys have more snow than we do.
It's weird down here. I mean, it's like winter definitely came out of its lane.
You can have it for now. I'm okay with that.
Well, you guys get the worst of it usually. I should mention, this is the district basically runs from Thief River Falls, correct, all the way to the northern border, and it goes over to Lake of the Woods, and then over to the, Red River of the North, right?
That's correct.
I have been up in that district a few times. Are you still there, Connie?
Yep, I'm
okay.
Here.
All right, we got a little bit of an interference there. But I've been up to your district a few times myself. It's a huge district. I want to try to help you just on gas costs alone driving around this district coming up. But why don't we take a few moments here and talk a little bit about who exactly is Connie Lindstrom?
Sure. Well, I have a master's degree from the University of North Dakota in business administration with a concentration in government and policy. I work as a business analyst for ag producers and for biofuels clients. Mostly when I'm working with a business, I'm helping them make the most of their resources, figure out how to plan for the future, invest wisely. Those are exactly the kind of things that I want to do as a representative, because we need to make sure we're investing in infrastructure wisely for the long term.
You said to me when I called you to set this up, we talked a little bit about infrastructure. Sometimes it's not It is relatively kind of not the most exciting stuff to talk about. But if you don't do your infrastructure correctly and you just do the basic bare minimum to maintain things, you end up having pretty big problems. And so you need to have a better game plan than just waiting for something to break and then trying to fix it at the cheapest cost. You've got to look at this in a way that is beneficial to the community, that it's more cost effective sometimes to do something that's going to last 40, 50 years, whether it's a road or bridge, a pumping station, a water filtration system. It doesn't matter. You just got to do it right. And I don't think we're doing it right in a lot of places right now in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, a flood mitigation project is a heck of a lot cheaper than sending out the National Guard.
Amen.
and doing an emergency project. And we've got what's been ranked as the most dangerous dam in the state up here at Lake Bronson State Park. And it will be a lot less expensive to get that repaired than to deal with any catastrophic events. So fortunately, that did make it into the final bonding bill. So hopefully that is on the way to being getting fixed, but it shouldn't have gotten to this point in the first place.
I always put it towards when it's like road construction. I mean, you can either do asphalt or you can do concrete. And the thing which is funny is that I will drive in some areas of the metro on a concrete road, which I drove on when I was in high school, which was laid 30 years before that, and it still is in use today, and yet we still have this. I mean, there's a lack of foresight. There's a lack of just bare minimalness, which I just do not like with infrastructure. And it's nothing against asphalt. It's fine. It's a fine product. I know the petrochemical industry loves it. But, you know, when you look at it, it costs us far more to just constantly have to repave something every 5 years than just to do it right the first time with concrete. And that's kind of the way I look at it. When you look at infrastructure programs, it's not sexy. It's not ever going to get the top of the fold on the headline in a newspaper. But my God, when it comes to pound for pound taking care of constituents, that's where politicians need to be focusing their attention.
Yep, I totally agree. And I think that's what makes the quality of life good. That's what attracts businesses and attracts people to want to live in an area. If they have reliable infrastructure. It's not something that's maybe on the top of your list that you would say when in your conscious mind that you're thinking about it, but it certainly is at the top of the list when people are just thinking about what it's like to live somewhere, what they need when they want to invest in an area.
And when you talk infrastructure now, you cannot not include broadband. Your district is one of the areas which desperately needs broadband put in because, and I get it, some people look and say, well, I'll let the private sector do it. Well, the private sector is not doing it because it's not cost effective for them. But if you want a state that functions correctly, whether that's, you know, encouraging business growth, education systems, medical systems, you need to invest in this. And that is one area that 1A desperately needs an immediate improvement on is in broadband.
Yeah, if there is such a thing as a silver lining to this pandemic, it has really highlighted the need in this area for making sure that we all have access to telehealth, that we all can do school and work from home if we need to. We chose to move to Hallock, even though my husband is from about 20 miles east of here in Lake Brunson, because Hallock happens to have really good broadband internet, and I work from home, so I need it. But we didn't really have the option to live in a lot of places around the county because we just didn't have access to the infrastructure that we needed.
Talk a lot about this. It's Kittison County, Marshall County, that area of the state. I mean, when let's talk about this in the education element of it. In that, you know, you have schools, which, you know, I know some people want to do in-person school. They've got some hybrids. I'm hoping that works. But when it comes down to it, if you have to shut down a school district, you need that broadband. I mean, I'm presuming this has been a main focus of conversation on a lot of the school districts up in your area, that what happens if we have to fully go online or if that might be the case right now. Talk a little bit about that with broadband, because once again, that's, as you said, the pandemic highlights the problem.
Right, and it's not just students, it's also teachers. If you don't live in an area that has access to broadband, it becomes impossible to try to do school online. And we don't have, you know, you can't go to a McDonald's parking lot here. There isn't a McDonald's. Mm-hmm. So it's a real problem, and it's a problem that will continue to happen and has happened before the pandemic because the school districts are quite far apart. There are kids that need to ride the bus for an hour as it is. And when there's a snowstorm, people are trying to move towards being able to do online learning during occasions like that. So it's important for more than just this year, and it's an ongoing concern. We just really need to make sure that we've got the infrastructure in place. And it's not just school. It's also older people wanting to stay living in their homes but have access to nursing care via telemedicine. That's something we need to work towards as well. And having that good broadband infrastructure is going to get us there.
You know, you can't be in up there in say like Lancaster or over in Warren and have to drive to Thief River Falls. I mean, at that point, it becomes, you know, the pressure on the community that forces, as you talked about, you had to move to a different town. Because just your job, it wasn't going to work for you to be in that other town. How much, I mean, this is a problem. These are towns across the board. And sometimes it's moving out of state. If we're going to keep people in state, keep our best product, which is Minnesotans, here, then we have to make this investment.
Yep, absolutely. And, now is the time to do it. There is an increased focus. We have the opportunity here to talk about the value of low-density living and the value of diversifying our supply chains and stuff, all of the things that we have really highlighted this year that are problems and might not work. You know, we've got an opportunity to make those investments and to talk about why they're important. So at the same time that, budgets are really stretched, it's going to be a difficult couple of years. We also have an opportunity to turn a corner and build things in a different direction going forward.
Connie Lindstrom's joining us right now. Democrat of the day, 1A, very northwestern part of the state. This is going to scare you. I'm a veteran. I know. U.S. Army, that's right. I was a U.S. Army vet. I am a U.S. Army vet. You are a big champion of the Veterans Restorative Justice Act. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Actually, my husband is a military retiree from the Air Force, and so is my father. So come from a military family. So this is something that's really important to me. We have thousands of veterans in this district, and many of them don't have the same kind of access to services as other parts of the state simply because it is a remote area, and we tend to have smaller communities instead of bigger ones. Mm-hmm. So Veterans Restorative Justice is a program that is available in some areas of the state, but we need funding for it throughout the state. It's allowing veterans access to substance abuse help, mental health resources, instead of diverting them into the criminal justice system. It's actually a savings, a net cost savings. It will save the state millions once it's fully implemented. It lowers veteran suicide rates, repeat offenses. So it's a really good program, and we kind of have been, it's been bouncing around the legislature all year, and in every special session, we just need to, all of the major veteran organizations in the state are behind this, and we just need to get it done.
Mm-hmm. And I know it's something that's been used as a bargaining chip by Republicans, and it shouldn't be. Veterans care should not be a bargaining chip. It should just be something we do. And, you know, Connie, I know you probably are not a regular listener up way up in the northwestern part of the state, but it's something I hammer on all the time. I mean, we just do not take care of our veterans. And whether it's health care, education, job placement, making sure they get the benefits that their families have earned through the sacrifice of our brave men and women who have served our country, it's one of those things we got to get past the you know, by getting a Democratic Senate would help quite a bit, but you know, we got to get past this and just pass bills that basically help the community, because we just don't do enough. And this is, I will be the first to say, this is something that both parties have failed on in my mind in veterans care. So it's nice to see you, other veterans, other Democrats as well, saying, you know, no, this bill needs to get passed. So thank you for that.
Yeah, that's the thing that has been most frustrating for us, is seeing it kind of used, like you said, as this bargaining chip. These are real people that have a real need that we could easily fix, that would save money, and we just want it to stop being used as a negotiating tool. Get it done.
Now, Connie, you do not have the biggest district in the state. I've talked to a few of the guys up on the very northern border there that their districts are massive. You've got a huge district, though. And I want everyone to listen right now. I know you've got local DFL races. Help your local Democrat. By all means, please do. But if you're in a relatively safe district, I want you to make a donation to Connie, because she's got the gas alone to drive around this district is costly. There's a lot of costs that are involved in this. We want to run. Picking up a district like 1A would be just fantastic for the DFL. Remind people that the F in the DFL is farmer, and it would be fantastic to get Connie down here to St. Paul to represent this district. Volunteer and donate if you can. Connie, if someone wants to get in touch with your campaign, what's the website they should go to?
www.connielindstrom.org.
CONNIELINDSTROM.ORG, correct?
That is correct.
Connie, an absolute pleasure chatting with you. All my best up there. The weather's coming. Just we'll send some of it up for you in a little bit. All my best to everyone up in the 1A district, and thank you very much. All my best over the next 2 weeks, okay?
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You bet. Connie Lindstrom, 1A.